586, accept report on micro community concepts, building low income housing.
Ms. Withy, come on up. Good morning.
Thanks for having me. I'm here to talk about low cost housing, actual low cost housing. I think we all know that we have a certain gap in the housing in Portland. We have a shortage of housing, you know, obviously, but we have a very serious shortage of, in fact, we have non-existent affordable housing. So,
Michael, do you have a written report?
I do, and it was supposed to be handed to you.
Yeah, I've got one in my packet. Do you have some additional copies,
yes.
Carla? Okay, good.
So we created a nonprofit called Micro Community Concepts. And the theory was to develop micro communities, like you see on the screen there. These are locally built. They're from Hillsboro. I'm going to play a video right now so you can get a better idea. It's just about 2 minutes.
Well, what's good about this house for Haiti is that, first of all, the house is affordable. It's adaptable. It's sustainable. It's resistant to earthquakes, hurricanes, flooding. This house was put together in 9 days with six local laborers that were just selected at random around the site with no talent, no skills. Most of them were illiterate. One could speak a little bit of English. And they were able to put this together with a little bit of direction from me, a lot of direction from me, and how to put together. It's a modular system. This particular house is four modules put together that were designed on an original house design I found from the 1800s. It was a TK, T-I-K-A-Y, which is Haitian, the Creole for small house. What they did back then was they would have a 12 by 12 module. They get enough money, they build a gallery, which that deck is called a gallery. As they get more money, they either enclose the gallery into a room or they add another room, another 12 by 12, and they keep doing that as they get more money, add another 12 by 12, another 12 by 12. So what I did was take a modernization of the old TK design, the Haitian shotgun style, which also is found in New Orleans, which originated in Haiti from West Africa prior to Haiti. Light, airy, the house creates a breeze when you're inside. It's lifted off the ground for floods. You don't need to do a slab on grade. The site can be any terrain, rough. The house adjusts itself to the site with adjustable legs. One of the parameters in the design, the RFP, they wanted a house that was natural ventilation, natural lighting, daylighting. You can see how bright the house is and how your hair is blowing all over the place, getting in your eyes.
So these guys are out of Hillsboro, and I found out about these guys from a guy named Rob Justice, and I'm sure most of you guys are familiar with Rob. He founded Join, I think, about 20-something years ago. So he's been working together with Dave Carboneau on Home First Development. Dave Carboneau is a partner in TechDwell. And I originally found out about this about 2 years ago, and unfortunately, I kind of let it go. I joined a protest and kind of took a different route. I wish I would have stuck with this 2 years ago because we probably would have already had one built. So the idea is to be able to take and get somebody that makes minimum wage, let's say a single mom, and she works 20 hours a week, and she obviously can't afford a home. But these will rent for $250, so she can rent a home. So what we'd like to do is from $8,000 to $21,000 within that range, rent from $250 to $350 a month. So another great thing besides just for having affordable housing is that this model is self-replicating, meaning that after we pay the first pilot project off, then two-thirds of that money will go into a fund to fund the next micro community. And then we'll have two. And then two-thirds of all that rent collected will go to pay for another micro community. But we could also model it as one of these micro communities support, let's say, a neighborhood support center. It's another plan that I have working on. I don't talk about much because it kind of complicates things. But there's other things that we can use these funds to do to help with the homeless cause. So it's not strictly that. But I like the idea of low-cost, low-income individuals paying for housing for other low-income individuals. I think that's a unique idea, and it certainly saves a lot as far as taxes are concerned. So the self-replicating part is exciting. We also have many different ideas for types of neighborhoods, micro-communities. I know that seniors are, there's a big lack of housing for seniors. We could certainly build these communities strictly for seniors. We could have them for people that, let's say, just got out of prison. We could have a community strictly for that. We could also have families. As you've seen, these can be added too, so we can enlarge them for families. So we're really trying to help the neighborhoods. We're noticing an influx in Lentz and St. John's and many other of the neighborhoods. There's a growing population. So the first thing that we did was go to the neighborhoods and present this plan to them. We went to St. John's. We went to Lentz. And our first presentation was to Lentz, and we were invited by Jesse Cornett. So we presented this, and Jesse, at the end of the meeting, or the presentation, did a roll call of everybody that was in the audience. So all the different folks were there, and he took a vote whether they would be interested in exploring this further. And it was unanimous. Not one single person said no, or stand aside. There was none of that. So the people really do like it. I've yet to, of the 2,000 people that I've talked to about this program, I've yet to see one person say that, no, this is a bad idea. There's a lot of concerns. Anytime that low-income housing is built in anyone's neighborhood, there's lots of concerns, lots of questions about, are they going to be drug dealers? Are they going to be, they're going to be drunks? Are they going to steal from us? Are they going to rob us? And, it's kind of hard for me to keep a straight face when I have to answer that because, there are people that do that all over the city, and we shouldn't assume that because people are low income that they shouldn't be able to live in your neighborhood. I think that single mom that's working part-time at McDonald's deserves to live in your neighborhood just as much as you do. So it's kind of upsetting when I hear that. But the answer is no. There's plenty of federal studies that have been done about neighborhoods and the worth of someone's house going down because there is low-income housing near them, and that's just not true. It's not true at all. So do we have any? I'd like to take questions kind of as we go. Do you have any questions so far?
Well, one I have, and that is, have you, in exploring the concept, have you yet figured out whether there are zoning or permitting barriers? In other words, I know there are barriers of what we typically see built, but right. Is it legally possible in our zoning code? And it's a timely question because we're working on our comp plan right now.
So. That's a very big reason why I'm here presenting today. We did have a presentation with Commissioner Fritz. I believe zoning was there. From what I understand, they are legal in a high-density population area, but not legal for people's backyards.
So my understanding is that they're legal in multifamily zones, so R1, R2, those would be fine, allowed by right. And I think that they might be legal as accessory dwelling units, so just one rather than a bunch.
Right.
One on a single-family lot that otherwise has a house on it, you could build one of these as an accessory dwelling unit.
Right.
That's my understanding.
Apparently. Yeah. Okay.
So that is an issue, and that's something that I would like to explore further because Dave Carbonell seems to think that they're not legal. He has been in touch with zoning, and so that is a very big reason why we're here today, because we'd like to look further into that and see if there's any way that we can work that out, because it's obviously imperative. You know, putting these small units in people's backyard is going to offer great opportunity to the city as far as a source of income, because obviously, you know, there's going to be fees to do this, and people really don't mind paying a fee to have one of these 80. And then it's going to help with housing. We obviously need help with the housing. And it's going to help them, because they're going to have help paying their rent. A lot of these folks, you know, are really stretching their budget. So it's going to help everybody if we look into this deeper and make sure that it is legal before we go any further with letting people know that they can go ahead and put these in the backyards. A lot of people have inquired, so we'd like to know for sure. So if there's any way we can meet and discuss that, that'd be great.
Well, I have a couple questions, because what you just said prompted maybe a question for the commissioner in charge. How would this be different than an accessory dwelling unit, assuming someone wanted to have one of these units in their backyard?
I don't think we know that it is.
It isn't. But I think what I'm hearing Mr. Witte say is that he wants more than one in the backyard.
Right.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that Dave Carboneau, partner in TechDwell, has been to meetings with folks from zoning, and they have told him that, no, it's not illegal. So I would like to know absolutely for sure, maybe go through you to see.
You're welcome to make an appointment. We'll get the right folks in and find that.
So I guess the first question is, does this qualify under our existing rules for accessory dwelling units? And as you know, we've been trying to promote the creation of accessory dwelling units. So we actually, for a period of time, waived the systems development charges to encourage people to do them. And to Michael, what's the best example, maybe in the West Coast, of where this concept has been tried successfully?
You know, the concept that I'm talking about has never been tried. I've looked for it all over the place. The closest thing that I can find is Quixote Village up in Olympia. Quixote Village. There have been contingents from Portland to go up there to look at it, mm-hmm. to see what they've got going on. So Quixote Village is 16 units that have been stick-built. So they cost, you know, approximately $80,000 a piece. Mm-hmm. There's no bathrooms. There's no kitchens in the units themselves. They have a common area. They're sort of horseshoe style. They're on a lease, so they report to the government in fact, I think in about 4 years they have to go report. I mean, it's a great thing to do, but unfortunately, they don't have running water, and they don't have a system set up where they're going to end up multiplying, because obviously they need more than 16. It's not quite like Dignity Village, where you get just a certain amount of people helped forever. And what should be transitional housing ends up being permanent housing, so it only helps those 16 people. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, and the other question I wanted to ask you is, a couple years ago we got a presentation from the building trades that are involved in a unique program in the prisons,
right.
where they're helping inmates get career technical education so that when they're released from prison, they can qualify for the trades and hopefully get employment.
Right.
And one of the programs that they're doing is having inmates build micro homes. And they have a model and a business model they're trying to pursue. Have you looked into that at all as to whether those units would also fit within your concept?
You know, there are so many different concepts and so many different models. I mean, you can go online and see hundreds and hundreds of different models. I have, and I've chosen TechDwell because many different reasons, not just because they're local, but they're built very heavy duty. It kind of reminds me of going into Costco and seeing one of those big freezers. Steel, super insulation, and then steel. It's super strong. They're supposed to last for 5 decades. A few of us can put it up. If we need to move it, we can take it apart, put it back on the pallets, and move it. They're beautiful, aesthetic. I just like the design. I like everything about the TechDwell units. But I also looked into a thing called Blue Block. It's a new company here in Portland where they take and make cement built, very permanent buildings. And they could build us small units like this for about the same price, about $10,000, $12,000. So there's many different options.
I guess my final question is, I think in the prospectus, you're pretty clear that you're not looking for a public subsidy in part because you don't want to see the costs go up because of a number of policies that attach
right.
once you get a public dollar.
Right.
But in order to take this idea and develop it, what are the things you'd like us to do? What are the ways that you believe a city can be helpful in developing the concept?
Well, I think most importantly is land. Land is a big issue. I understand that, you know, city of Portland doesn't have a whole lot of land, and I understand that you're probably not in a position to give us land. What would be very nice is if you knew of people that could lease us land for, say, it's 5 years. And if we could lease a big enough piece of land where we could put 25 or 30 of these units, then we could use that income to go ahead and buy the land within 5 years. So that'd be a good start. We have been looking at property, though. We're looking at a property at 146th and Burnside. It's 0.45 acres, so it's not a very big piece of land, but we could fit 25 units on it. So it would certainly, even if I were a B Corp and I was doing this to make money, it would still be a good investment. So buying the land at 146th and Burnside would be a great start, but $350,000 for a plot of land is kind of a lot for us.
What's the zoning of it?
It's multifamily.
Well, I think, yeah, some of the follow-up things that we ought to work on are, one, let's confirm where this is legally possible and where it isn't under our zoning code. There might also be building code issues, but I suspect that's easier to figure out. But we ought to see what the gap is between what's legal and what we think should be. And again, we're in our comp plan revision process right now, so it's a good time to bring this up.
Good.
And then I think the outreach to neighborhood associations is a great idea. You know, this, I appreciate your innovation here. I mean, that's why we're putting this on the council calendar, giving it some visibility. About 20 years ago, there was a crazy idea called HOST, called Home Ownership, a Street at a Time, where a handful of activists said, you know, we could start buying up houses that are tax foreclosed and derelict and fix them up and sell them to people. And
right.
it worked. And in fact, it worked so well that they essentially worked themselves out of a job.
Nice.
But as a nonprofit, but that's a good thing in this case. And frankly, your effort here really reminds me of Ross Day and what he did with HOST. So I appreciate the fact that you're really looking for a really cost-effective solution. So I'm happy that you've made this much progress and wanted the council to get a chance to see the work. But we'll need to get engaged in planning, Sustainability Bureau Development Services, maybe others, in terms of figuring out how to make this work.
Mayor, just one comment about HOST. Actually didn't work themselves out of a job. They were put out of work because they couldn't get capital and they couldn't afford the land. So it points to the challenge of even a well-capitalized, mature nonprofit that has connections to banks and other entities about the difficulty of finding the dirt and financing it. Have you had a chance to make a presentation before the Housing Bureau's Advisory Commission to sort of lay out your idea and get some feedback from the Housing Bureau?
No, I haven't. Initially, it was just about finding out what the neighborhood associations, what the people, what the citizens want, because I know without their support, it's just not going to happen. It's just like Amanda, you told me early on, without the neighborhoods, it's just not going to happen. So that's what we've been focused on. We've been also giving presentations, say, for instance, to the Human Rights Commission. And we're working with the Human Rights Commission, we're working with the NAACP, and we're certainly looking forward to going much further with this. However, it does depend on zoning. So without zoning, and then secondly, we'll look for property.
One of the benefits of going before the Housing Commission is you'll get lots of for-profit and nonprofit developers that give you some feedback about the challenges they face that
right.
may be relevant to what you want to do.
Right.
And certainly Rob Justice is no stranger to coming forward with ideas about how to reduce costs for housing. So I would encourage you to do that.
Good. Thank you very much.
Great. Well, thanks. Anything else you want to – I just didn't want to interrupt. Anything else that you wanted to include here?
Well, actually, there's – you know, there's the money that we need to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on the last page. You know, I really don't want to talk – down about the money that's been spent, you know, the different options that that were utilized before. 25 units will cost about $300,000 of these at about $12,000 a piece. That's including, you know, the bathroom and the kitchen apparatus, and the land should cost about $200,000 unless we can lease it. The development costs are about $100,000. I've had meetings with, we've had meetings with Home Aid, the building association's sort of the philanthropist part, Home Aid. They do a lot of work pro bono. So they could actually excavate for us. So we can save money. So the rent charge, $250 to $350. The maintenance, you figure $100 a month, because maintenance is very important to us. We want to make sure that we not only maintain our properties so that they're aesthetic all the time, but we also want to improve on them all the time. So a third of it does go back into our little micro communities. And then if we were to finance, $200 per unit per month is what it would cost us. So it would take us like 10 years to be in the black. And so it'd be 10 years just to pay itself off. And that's not really what we want to do. We want them to multiply as quickly as possible. So all the assistance you could offer is great. And I want to compare this price that we're talking about, which is about $35,000 per unit, including the land, everything else, for 25 units. $600,000 for 25 permanent spaces for people. Currently, when we build low-income housing, we're spending about $220,000 per unit. I did the math and just say we're doing $120,000 per unit. That's low end of what it costs to build a regular studio apartment. And that's $3 million. So you got 25 units for $3 million, or you've got 25 units for $600,000 or less. The math is obvious. We need to start looking at different options, not only the micro communities, but I wanted to mention Rob Justice again and what he's done with Home First Development. They can build stick buildings, regular apartment buildings, for $60,000 per unit. They've been contracted, and I think you know this, Commissioner Saltzman, they've been contracted by a private organization where they've been given a $10 million budget. So they're going to be building 500 low-income units in Portland over the next 5 years. But they build them for $60,000. That building formula is going to make a big difference. We're trying to fill gaps. Right to Dream is and those folks, they're trying to fill a gap of people that can't work. A lot of those guys are mentally ill. They'd be sleeping on the street. They're saving us millions. So Right to Dream's filling a gap. Micro communities will fill a gap. Rob and Dave's deal in building formula with Home First Development will fill a gap. If we can get all three of these things kind of working simultaneously, then we could take half the homeless population off the street, and more importantly, we can prevent homelessness from happening in the first place. And that really is our concept. It's about stopping it from happening in the first place. So by offering $250 rent, we're gonna give people the hope that they can afford, even at a minimum wage job, that they can afford a place to live. So I hope that we can get together in the zoning. Perhaps I can email you. We can set up a meeting. And in the meantime, if there's anything that you guys think you can do, please get a hold of me. I have no problem meeting any of you. Okay.
Great. Thank you. Other questions, comments for Michael? Thank you very much. Thank Great you. Presentation. Thanks. Good work. Resources. So I think we have to take action on the report, but anyone else want to speak
yes.
on this item?
We have three people signed up.
Okay.
Lightning, Charles Johnson, and Teresa Roberts. Please come on up.
Come on up, please. Good morning. Lightning, I think you're on first.
Good morning. I want to make it clear I only represent myself on this issue. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Think Lab. Now, what I want to do, number one, is on this, is I want to commend Mike Withey on his efforts here, showing real creativity and innovation. And what I really like about his concept is he's looking at keeping these rents, what I consider the term affordable, very affordable. And we need more of these type of units throughout the city. basically to end chronic homelessness. And that can be a reality in Portland, Multnomah County, and such ideas that Mr. Withy has presented is a way to do that. Definitely fits the needs. I like these type of units. Some of the concerns I may have is, do they have warranties? What's the longevity of a unit like this? And I can get together with Mike down the line, but I'd like to see more funding go in the direction, in their direction. I'd like to see more pilot projects created out there using their concept, because I think it's going to really be beneficial. And when you look at what's happening also with the Airbnb on these short-term rentals, we're going to have a lot of inventory out in the marketplace that there is no doubt it will begin to reduce homelessness. And that's the key. It's having the inventory to the population and filling the needs and making sure that, it's been mentioned in here before, how do you take somebody with zero income who's living outside and put them in a unit? Well, what's being presented here today is getting very close to being able to do that. And that's been an obstacle for a lot of people to try to comprehend. How do you take someone living outside with no income and get them into some form of housing? And when we start the calculations, and Mike is definitely on the mark there on what Rob Justice can build some of the units, the micro apartments, say 60 to 100,000. He's looking at more from like maybe 10 to 20,000 for his concept. And the reality is that it costs us about 30-plus thousand in publicly funded services to have an individual laying outside on the sidewalk and not put into housing. His concept will work. It's affordable housing, and I hope people step up and look at resources to fund their group, because this will save a tremendous amount of money throughout Portland, Multnomah County, and it serves a great purpose. Thank you.
Thank you. Charles, good morning. Go ahead, please.
Hi, my name is Teresa Roberts, and I, too, represent myself. I was privileged to help build micro houses in post-Katrina Louisiana and the neighboring states in partnership with Lowe's Building Supplies, whom I don't actually recommend as a working partner. And they had a design competition, and all these swanky architects competed, and they came up with micro-housing designs starting at 600 square foot. And the problem that we had in post-flood states was zoning. People wanted the houses, and Lowe's was like developing them as quickly as we could, because the FEMA trailers, you know, are a very temporary solution, and people needed something they could live in while rebuilding. People needed to be able to put something small on their property to support a family member. 80% of aid in catastrophe does not come from insurance, private insurance, or public funding. 80% of help that individuals receive comes from members of the community, strangers, friends, and family. And I'm also privileged to know people that went in that way into New Orleans, into the Ninth Ward, in places like that, to save entire neighborhoods. Because what happens when a city floods, and we live in Portland, Port land, which I keep pointing out to you during global warming is a major issue for us. If you think we won't flood, New Orleans didn't think they would flood. Places like that didn't think they would flood. And in the wake of a disaster like that, when you start running into zoning problems with it, being able to put in small housing, and you also have the government, instead of helping people, shipping them out of their community in hopes they will never return, going in with bulldozers and raising their neighborhoods while they're absent, and stuff like that going on, you're in a desperate situation, and you don't want to be dealing with your zoning problems at that point, and you don't want to have not thought ahead and gotten some ideas into place of how to house large neighborhoods that are gone, and people need to be able to live there and rebuild. So being prepared with a micro-community concept would serve us well as a port town in general. And also, I have to agree on the cost of having people homeless. And one reason we have people homeless is because they don't have stable addresses. They don't get their Social Security, even if they have qualified for it. They're not getting money that's owed to them that they worked hard all their lives. I mean, I'm fortunate to live here, and I pay $200 a month in rent because I live in shared housing where a group of people have rented a house, and we're able to pull that off. I've been fortunate to house sit in this community at Cascadia Commons in Beaverton near the Jesuit High School, where the community does all of their own minor maintenance, their own gardening. They grow gardens. They raise their own food. They have optional two community meals a week, partly fed from their own gardens.
I need you to wrap up soon because
you know, this is extremely doable. It's almost low-hanging fruit. And we have matching funds programs in this community that, you know, we could work with, I'm sure. But I do think that going into the legislative session, you've targeted entirely correctly zoning. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Charles.
Good morning, Commissioners. Glad to be back, and I'm glad to see the Council so engaged, and I thank you, Mayor, for getting this on as a 9:30 time certain. When we talk about questions and concerns about zonings, I just want to put that in the bigger context. Anyone who came here over the Hawthorne Bridge this morning before they crossed our river, the Willamette River, sometimes they'll look off to their right, and they'll notice that somehow Inner Southeast gets zoned to have a huge pile of debris, dirt, and rubble. And yet we can't house people. And I'm glad to see the mayor's response, because it's not so much an eyesore. Things need to happen. You know, resources need to be there. But it is an important reminder for the city that we need to get things done that positively affect the lives of suffering people more than we need to maintain channels of access for successful developers. Obviously, that's where economic growth arguably comes from. But even those people, in the way they've engaged with R2D2 and the site relocation, they know that the government needs to work on removing zoning barriers and being innovative and finding solutions so that people who are on fixed incomes have more interesting options than the bare painted concrete walls I see when I go and visit people in Northwest Towers. Even the people at Reach, who, of course, are desperate to work with you and can keep funding going to them, know that their solution is not the solution for everybody. And I just want to encourage this council, especially Housing Commissioner Dan Saltzman, I'm sorry that Tracy Manning is here, to talk more and more, to have more and more time certain agendas where we talk about these issues and talk about how many people are in fixed income in Portland, how much capacity is really out there, what's the gap, how are we going to innovate and fill that gap so that the people with the least resources or in times of trouble or a shortage of talents, personal talents, aren't left suffering and sleeping on the sidewalk or moving with their children from one shelter to another, trying to cross county lines to Washington County to make sure that they can sleep with their child in shelter. So I'm very pleased to see Mr. Withey bring forth this program and see the council engage, and I just want to encourage your efforts to remove zoning barriers and to also in your private conversations. I think the mayor meets a little bit excessively with the Portland Business Alliance each week, but it is opportunity.
Not each week.
For him to engage and find people who have access to capital, access to philanthropy, and get that channel to meet the needs. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Solidarity, not charity.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Anyone else?
One more. Okay. Crystal Ilinski.
Okay. I'm Crystal. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning. My name is Crystal Ilinski, and I'm thinking that the bureaucracy alone would make this worthwhile. For years, I've I've been following this with interest through JOIN and R2D2 Dignity Village, and I think Portland is ready for this. When I first came to City Hall, I was going through that transition of my income staying the same and the rents coming up in inner east side and a slumlord, and what landed me into homelessness. And then eventually I got on Section 8, and I'm paying this range right now. I know it's possible, but it's still precarious. You never know if you can stay in the system of HAP and HUD and public housing. This seems like a more a simple process instead of all the hoops you have to go through and all the appointments and paperwork. And it also would build community, what I've seen in other places before. But definitely here in Portland, we just have a sense of it. When I lived in Eastern Europe, everybody knew about Dignity Village. It was quite famous, but they were comparing it to what they had in these buildings that were 50 years old at the time, the blocks, the cement blocks, and they still work, but people didn't like them so much, but you could see how it helped in certain areas to have infrastructure, shops, marketplaces, and we have it here. We have it in New Columbia. We've managed to work that out. There's diversity, there's home ownership, renting, shops that people work together on. So I think that alone would work. There's the status quo that this sort of building doesn't really fit in, but I see at the Expo Center, that's kind of cool now to have those mother-in-law homes, those little cubes, and you see them in all the magazines. So it's sort of like that. I think we can get over that. At a neighborhood association meeting, we were talking about building Cobb benches, and we have every neighborhood has empty lots that we're thinking of growing food in and putting Cobb benches in. And when my neighbors said, a couple of them were saying, well, what if the homeless people sleep there? I was like, wait, why don't we give them some kind of shelter? Wow, what a concept. We could have them tend the yard. Other things were mentioned that I wanted to talk about. But definitely, I saw this in New Orleans in 2006 and 2011. I worked at Common Ground. And at first, it was Common Ground building some homes and that other agency that was shut down by Congress. Do you remember the name?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, right? The ones that collected, did the voting. Any rate, they were building simple homes and training people to build them, which I think would be excellent. And then when I came back, it was Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt homes. And they were the same kind of construct. They were a little more modern, funky looking, but people living there were proud. They got over the stigma of, oh, we only have this because we were flooded in the lower Ninth Ward. But I think it could work. And my final question, just really quickly, or final point is, what is our zoning? I'd really like to know what's going on with our zoning codes. We need to get into this. This would help us in so many levels. I mean, we got Randy Leonard's Rose up, but what about the cell phone towers, the infills that no one likes? It would just be so nice if we could figure out through Airbnb and zoning codes, construction, why do we have shoddy construction like on Interstate when it was just brand new, that Interstate Firehouse building next door? We can use this as an opportunity to streamline and get our community involved.
Thank you.
Thank
Thanks
you.
Very much. Okay. Any other council comments before we take a roll call on accepting the reports? A report? Then do that, please.
A motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Fish.
Well, Michael, where's Michael?
There he is. He's behind the camera.
Behind the camera. Okay. We're blocked by coin. Michael, thank you for bringing this report forward. In a crisis, we do have to be creative and innovative and look at different approaches. One of the last projects that the Housing Bureau funded was for modular housing in Lentz. And it turns out there's a company outside of Salem that builds modular units. They can be shipped by truck, and the entire, I think it was 6 to 8 unit a building was assembled over a long weekend. And not only is it driving down the per unit cost, but it's creating jobs in Oregon in a place where they were building the modular units and then shipping them. So those are the kinds of new and creative ideas we need to embrace.
Well, we're actually talking about
you're fine.
But anyway, Michael, thank you for your persistence on this and bringing forth your vision, and it deserves our full attention. So thank you. Aye.
Saltzman?
Thank you, Mr. Withey, for your dedication to micro-community concepts. We appreciate it. And, speaking on behalf of the Housing Bureau, we stand ready to work with you and people like Home First Development, recognizing that there is some reticence on Home First Development's willingness to engage with using public dollars to make this type of a vision a reality. But we are very intrigued by it, and certainly the cost is very appealing. Thank you. Aye.
Novick.
Thank you for telling us about another possibility to add to the toolkit of addressing our affordable housing crisis. And again, like my colleagues, I really appreciate your persistence on this issue and really appreciate every time you come before the council. Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you for the presentation. If you'd just stop by my office afterwards and talk to Christina or ask her to get the right folks from Development Services, I'd be happy to meet again. And I particularly appreciated your statement that Dignity Village fills a gap, Right to Dream 2 fills a gap, this can fill a gap. There's no one-size-fits-all solution, but we need a number of different options for folks to choose to help them when they need affordable housing. Thank you for your work on this. Aye.
Hales.
Well, thank you to the council for your engagement in this discussion today and for good testimony. Michael, thank you for your good work so far. I know there's a lot more work ahead. My staff is here, and we'll certainly work with you and the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability on those questions of what's legal, what's not, what should change, as we work on the zoning code. I mean, we work as a city with an amazing spectrum of nonprofits, and it usually starts with one person with a good idea, whether it's pulling ivy out of Forest Park or planting trees or turning an ugly two-story parking garage into a public square. It usually starts with one or two people and a good idea, and you've gotten this one started in just that way. Then it takes engagement of the city's agencies and the communities like the neighborhood associations that can help make this happen. So I think you're doing this the right way. I think it's a good idea. I think you hear a commitment here from the council to work with you to develop it further. So thank you. Aye. Okay. Good job.